Hello, welcome to the Cosmic Eye Show. I am your host, Jason Napolitano. And on the line, it is my pleasure to introduce for you for the very first time, Mr. Chris Sheridan.
First time ever.
First time in 160 something shows, right? So there you go.
Finally, it's about time.
It's about time I actually introduced you for the first time, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. Well,
a premiere, like, you know, 10 years after the movie came out.
Exactly.
I'll premiere someday. Mark my word.
Mark my words. And here it is, 160 something episodes in. It's our premiere. So welcome to the premiere.
And speaking of premiere, we're going to be talking about is, I believe, the very first published work of Mr. Manly P. Hall. So that is a premiere or a debut, if you will. Maybe all that and more.
Wow, thank you for that segue. Excellent. And you said you were saying this work that we're going to speak about today is from around 1922, you think, right?
Yes.
All right. So the book in question that Chris just mentioned in a very clever way is Symbolic Essays, First Published Works of Manly P. Hall. Manly P. Hall. So, you know, if you've listened to our show before, that Chris and I are both great fans and students of Manly P. Hall, and we both worked, of course, at PRS. That's where we met each other. Chris was there quite longer than I was, but we spent a good amount of time there as well, both studying and working in the bookstore, which was exciting. And Chris, you worked in the academic program and pretty much in every department around the Philosophical Research Society, right?
Right, wore many hats.
So we were both alumni of that organization, as it were. And Chris, you actually have a degree from there, which is very cool, So on to the material at hand. So this is a pamphlet that has three sections in it. We went to the section at the end of it called Wands and Serpents. So the show today is centering on the symbolism of wands and serpents. So, you know, for many of us, the only experience we may have had with wands is maybe seeing, you know, in a movie, we've seen Harry Potter with his wand, or maybe we've seen a stage magician with a wand. If we are into ceremonial magic or ritual magic or Wicca or any of the earth-based religions, most of us are going to be familiar with the wand's use in ritual work. Serpent, of course, is a huge symbol in most religious texts and most symbolic and mythological systems around the world. The serpent is a very important symbol. It has many, many meanings. We're going to go over a few of them from Manly Hall's point of view and maybe throw in some of our own. And again, looking at wands and serpents. So the basic idea then that he sets out in the beginning of this book is that the wand itself represents the spinal column, in the human being. And then the serpent is that serpent power, that kundalini energy, that vibratory power that runs up and down the spine. And then, of course, it also is a certain sort of quality of creation, involution, and evolutionary energy represented by that serpent power. We'll get into some of that. So we're going to get into some of the importance of these wands and serpents. It's a fun subject, and I think you're going to really enjoy the show today. Do you have anything to add to that you'd like to share about? It's kind of an overview-y sort of look at the pamphlet before we dive down.
Well, yeah, the pamphlet itself was a standalone. This, what we are referring and drawing from this printing, is from the 80s when Hall was still alive. He put his first, I think it was three of his very, very earliest works together in this compilation. And this actual one, Wands and Serpents, was the first. And the full title is Wands and Serpents, The Philosophy of the Thrice Greatest. And he doesn't really come out and say it, but this would be Hermes. And if you've ever seen the Caduceus of Hermes, very known, very popular, very visible symbol in anything medical, it's the staff with the winged spread at the top and the two snakes intertwining, going up the central rod. you know, the medical symbol is also, you know, a symbol of Hermes. That's kind of where it came from, very much so. So just to add that in there, that this is wands and serpents, the philosophy of thrice greatest, and he's referring to Hermes. So these are viewpoint in a way.
Great point. Yeah, exactly. So he's laying out the idea that we're going to be looking at this from the wisdom of Hermes, or the Hermetic philosophy, which is the basic tradition that the Western mystery schools adhere to and draw from, the Hermetic wisdom of and the Neoplatonic wisdom of essentially of Alexandria. Really, that was the home of this, and the Gnosticism and Hermetic principles, Egyptian principles, and occult principles that come out of that time and space, around 100 to 200 AD in Alexandria, something like that. But of course, drawing from the ancient wisdom that reaches far back into the pre-recorded history, and so forth. So it's very ancient, very old. But much of the work from that time period, and of course, during the Renaissance, there was a great amount of interest in this work, the Hermetic work, in Italy, and those scholars, and it had a great influence on the artists, Da Vinci and Botticelli and the great Renaissance artists and so forth, because there was a translation of the Corpus Hermeticum that was done at that time by the Medici's funded it. And it became wildly popular, and you see these representations of pagan figures and Hermetic symbolisms and so on in the Renaissance art, even though oftentimes it's couched in biblical allegories, because the church was so powerful. But at that time, that you could begin to see like a Renaissance of Greek thought, Greek wisdom, Neoplatonic thought, and all of this sort of stuff we're talking about. All right, so without further ado, let's jump into this. As we said, he first sets the book up with some symbols. He shows you a couple of symbols of these wands, which are interesting. And he's got a one that looks like sort of a magician's wand of today, like a stage magician's wand. And then there's one that has a sort of tube-like quality, and it has some ancient lettering on it. And that is represented from a book from Keys of Solomon the King, which comes from the British Museum, and a lot of the magic from the Middle Ages is represented in that book, and this wand here. And then there's a snake wand, which is interesting because then it combines the two symbols of the wand and the serpent together. I thought that one was interesting, didn't you?
Well, I did, and it's also articulated, like it can move, it can fold, it can bend. So here's something, a rod that you think is, very solid and, immoving, and then it becomes, so it really has both qualities, the rod and the snake.
Yeah, which is really, and what's interesting too, because he talked about how, how some of these Middle Ages magicians, they would actually use this wand, and they would bend it so that its tail was in its mouth. And of course that would form the Ouroboros, which is the symbol of eternity. A symbol of infinity, in essence, rejuvenation, regeneration, and so forth, and all the interesting symbolism that goes on with the serpent. That's why the serpent is such a powerful symbol, and it's used in so many different ways. Mostly in the West, we've come to know the serpent in a sort of negative connotation, that it's conning Eve into biting the fruit of the forbidden fruit in the Garden of Eden. But again, and one of these days we'll need to go and break some of that symbolism down. But it's an apt symbol because a serpent is a dangerous creature. But at the same time, and that's I think what this allegory is about in the Bible, it's both a bestower of wisdom, but it also can be a bestower of death if misused. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean. And so that energy is very powerful, and they always talk about that in the yoga traditions, that raising the kundalini energy, while it's a positive thing, if one isn't sort of prepared for ethically, morally, spiritually, psychologically, physically, even, it would be like putting too many volts through a system that wasn't able to handle it. Do you know what I mean? too many volts of electricity into something that, that wasn't equipped to take that much voltage, let's say. And so, you know, it can be very dangerous. And that's why, you know, and oftentimes, you know, the serpent power is analogous to electricity or to different types of, you know, invisible energy and things like that, which is interesting. So speaking of this wands and serpents, let's talk about the idea in the Bible, because I think this is one of the interesting allegories that he points out is the story of Moses and Aaron. Do you have that particular section open in Exodus, or do you want me to read that?
Yeah, you can read that. I just, and before you do, before he wrote that, he wrote you were talking about Genesis, just to kind of tag on to that. He talks about paintings of the fall of man. The serpent is always depicted in the tree coming down, the head pointed downward. That's, you know, that energy of bringing that involution, you know, coming down from a refined into the earthly, more carnal, you know, corporeal realm. And then it's the rising up. The regeneration,
yeah,
is rising, but it's also important that it does come down.
Well, we wouldn't exist if it didn't come down. I think that's one of the reasons, and that's one of the allegories of that, the idea of the fall, you know, in the Garden of Eden, is it's actually this this highly spiritualized energy coming into physical manifestation, or what he called crystallization, I think, in the pamphlet. And it's as if this energy is hardened down into a material existence at a much lower vibration, both spiritually and, you know, kind of temporally speaking. And then, you know, it's when something is made, you know, incarnated, you know, made of flesh, made physical, which is interesting too. And then, you know, then the idea then of evolution is, or evolution in contrast to the involution of us coming into materialization, is sort of moving into a more spiritual state, right?
While we're still here on Earth.
While we're still here.
To be, you know, sort of, you know, these coats of many layers needed to be put on us to be able to exist here. But while we're here, one of the goals is to kind of at least psychically shed those off, you know, one by one. Before we transition up, we'll already be refined again. You know, it's the winter when everything goes down into the earth and then comes up, which we'll get to. But then that becomes our task, which is, I guess, leads into what part you're going to read about, Aaron, I think.
Yeah, exactly. One more word, though, about the wand. The wand is also analogous to the will. It's analogous to concentration. It symbolizes concentration and focus as well. So it's like there's a hint in that when you understand that the wand both symbolizes the spine itself, but it also symbolizes the will and the desire to actually cause that energy to rise up. And so it's not just that energy, though, that we're talking about when we're talking about the symbolism. We'll get more into this, but it's also the qualities of higher spirituality, like, you know, loving kindness and compassion and altruistic works and so forth, right? So there's an ethical and moral dimension to this as well, isn't there?
There is, and symbolized through something like a rod or a wand, that it's kind of narrow and pointed, that it's very clear on its direction.
It's clear on its direction. Wow. Yeah, very good point. Very good point. And that's, you know, and that's the thing, is like you're putting your clarity, your concentration, and your focus on raising this energy, raising this vibrational quality in yourself. And there's a hint there. So, all right, I'm going to read this then. This is from Exodus chapter 7, verse 8 through, what are we going down to? 10, or down through 12, it looks like. Okay. The Lord said to, well, let me contextualize this. So Moses and Aaron have been charged by the Lord to go into Pharaoh to demand the freedom of the Israelite slaves that were working for the Egyptians. So this is when they go in to confront Pharaoh. So the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, when Pharaoh says to you, this is prior to it a little bit, and then we get into it. Pharaoh says to you, perform a wonder, then you shall say to Aaron, take your staff and throw it down before Pharaoh, and it will become a snake. So Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and did as the Lord had commanded. Aaron threw down his staff before Pharaoh and his officials, and it became a snake. Then Pharaoh summoned the wise men and the sorcerers, and they also, the magicians of Egypt, did the same by their secret arts. Each one threw down his staff, and they became snakes. But Aaron's staff swallowed up theirs. So Aaron's staff that became a snake actually swallowed up all of Pharaoh's magicians' staffs who did the same work. So that's an interesting symbol there. Manly Hall pointed out, interestingly, that was the idea of really transmuting this energy into another form. In other words, the snake's not specifically, it's not really killing the other snake, it's consuming it. I mean, there's certain death, but really what's going on is consuming it. There's a transformational process going on, symbolically speaking. And Manly Hall points out how, you know, this energy, this Kundalini energy, it's a lot like, you know, he didn't say this, but this is my analogy for it. It's a lot like the Force in Star Wars. You can do what you will with it. It can be dark or it can be light, you know, that energy. And so really the transmutation of the energy is a process whereby you're turning kind of negative, dark, destructive qualities into something higher, into spiritual, you know, spiritual pursuits, into, you know, good works, and into, you know, peaceful mindsets, and into, you know, regenerative types of qualities and so on. But you know, the interesting thing is it's the same energy, right?
Well, it is. And this allegory also shows how the light destroys the dark, because, you know, Egypt was considered, you know, the black from the Nile River, being this, you know, land of darkness, or the dark arts, the magicians of Egypt, and that through Aaron's rod/snake was able to consume the others, because it was the light consuming the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And this is true in everyday life. You know, when it's bright outside, you could get out your brightest flashlight in the middle of the day, and it really wouldn't do anything. You wouldn't notice it, wouldn't be seen. You're not destroying anything. It's too light out. But when there's darkness, and if it's very, very dark, and you do something as simple as light a match, it's like, whoa, it's like lightning. Everything lights up. So even a little bit of light can destroy the darkness. And this is where, you know, I think this leads, but it's also a demonstration of, it was that quality you're talking about that Aaron had imbued his staff with, that he threw down, that it would have this power that the lightness has over the dark.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. I want to read a little paragraph from Manly Hall's work that I just refound. He says, and this is really what we're talking about, in the same way man's life today is a contest between higher and lower principles. When the spiritual powers are centered in the emotions and passions, man starts into action, and the forces that inevitably result in crystallization, there's that crystallization again, and death. There's sort of a quality of hardness or brittleness when you think about crystallization, you know, and then when you think about the light that runs through it, it's like, it's more permeable, it's more open to the higher powers and things like that. And, you know, there's an interesting idea there. But when he lifts them up through altruism and service, the spiritual fire flows upward and creates the five-pointed star, which heralds the coming of the Christ within himself. It's interesting because in many meditation practices, the idea of the five-pointed star is when you open up the chakra that's between the third eye, basically, and that's associated with that five-pointed star. So the idea of when you reach that level of illumination, the opening of the third eye, it's symbolized in the star. And oftentimes people have reported when they've you know gone into deep meditations and that they've felt that opening of that center there, that they actually see a five-pointed star. I report a purplish or bluish hue to the area and so on, which is one of the colors associated with that area. So it's interesting, you know, the symbolism has been around for a long, long time. So you know that's an interesting point you can make. The other thing, kind of going back to this idea of the serpent in Eden, and you were talking about that downward pointed serpent. That's again where a lot of the ideas come from of this sort of destructive nature of this energy. And, you know, there's actually the interesting thing about this is, you know, Manly Hall mainly is talking about the philosophical qualities. But of course, there is an actual physiological energetic component to this, too, that's running throughout our body. And that, you know, they would call, which we've been talking about, Kundalini, which, you know, is a real psychophysical sort of reaction that people experience. And if you've meditated or done yoga, you know, you can probably attest to the fact that you've felt this energy in your own body mind. So there's of course that side to it. And then there's the other side to it, which goes hand in hand with it. And, you know, this is the side really Manly Hall was mainly focusing on, is the philosophical and ethical deeds and actions and thoughts and study, which in yoga terms would be more like jnana yoga, which is the path of the mind, where you're actually using the mind to do this, as opposed to like a, you know, a kundalini or a hatha type yoga where you're doing, you know, physical poses and meditations and so on. You're actually using the mind to manipulate that energy. So those are interesting. It's probably a more Western quality of that, using symbols, using teachings and philosophy, and going deeply into symbolic ideas and so on is probably the path that we're more familiar with here, right?
Right. And this this staff, this rod, this wand, he goes on to say that, you know, from Aaron as well as Odin, both got their rods from the tree of life, which would also go back to Genesis. Of course, the serpent kind of came down from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. But this being the tree of life, whose, you know, roots are in heaven and branches are on earth. And as we get this rod, it's dormant. Okay, it doesn't really have that power. And for it to become powerful, like in the winter, he goes on, where the sap, you know, just physically goes down into the roots to survive the winter, the tree looks dead. There's sort of a deadness. It's not alive. It's not, you know, showing any signs of life. But when it warms up and the sap, you know, moves forth and the sun comes back out, we see the tree spring to life. And the first thing that we see are the buds. It will grow on the stems or the branches. So we know that this life has brought back in. Well, nature does that naturally, of course, nature in her way. But we have to participate in this. And this is, again, where the ethics come in, and also the dedication and the concentration and discipleship, I guess, if you want to call it that, to really be on this path. You know, it takes our involvement, and like you would cultivate, you know, a garden. Yes, it's stuff grows anyway. And stuff, flowers grow through the cracks on the sidewalk in spite of the city. You know, nature has her way. But when you farm or you garden, you're actually helping the process. You're manipulating, you know, the soil, and you're making sure that, you know, the sun and the water and everything happens in its right proportions to do something the plant's already going to do. But for it to bud and to bloom and to show, in this sense, that you're demonstrating the good works, that you've done it correctly, that you've taken the care to cultivate this new growth. And that's this spiritual development that he talks about through this process.
Yeah, great point. Great point. And it's like, I like what you're talking about too. And you know, it is, it's a process of hard work, of diligent work, of, you know, bumps and bruises along the way and, you know, difficulties and challenges and so on. But it's a work of dedication. You really do have to dedicate yourself to it. And you have to, you know, this is where that will, the idea of will in that symbol of the wand or the symbol of the staff, which are, you know, really the same thing. If you're familiar with the tarot card of the magician, you see that the magician is holding up a wand in his right hand and is pointing with his left hand, is pointing with his finger, and it's indicating that he's focused and concentrated on a particular thing, on a particular goal, but he's guided by the higher source. You know, it's the right hand going up into the air. It's showing us that he's guided by the higher self or by divine mind. But his work is to be that conduit. His work is to be that sort of worker for the Lord, as it were. So, you know, we go out and, you know, for the, you know, we're doing our work in life and, you know, we're a representative of that one source that, and that one power that we're all a part of. But we have to, you know, we have to make the choice. It's not easy work. It's not easy work. It's not easy work to get out into the community and to do work. It's not easy work to write and share things and, you know, be a positive person and be a voice of reason in you know, in difficult situations and to try to make a positive difference. Sometimes, you know, and then that's where it's like that downward pull of day-to-day life, you know, all the negative stuff you see in the media and so on is difficult to pull yourself out of, you know, getting caught in the inertia of that whole sort of zeitgeist of modern living, let's call it, is a challenge. So, you know, you have to be very diligent, focused, and concentrated on what your goal is. And, you know, essentially with all of this stuff, you know, the goal is self-realization. It's union with the higher self. It's self-direction, as it were. So in other words, the divine source is guiding you in a way that, you know, you begin to operate in a harmonious way with the natural order of the universe, in essence, without sort of gumming up the natural harmony that exists. You know, you kind of get out of the way, you put yourself in accord with the Tao, as the Taoist might say. You know, but it takes work. It's, you know, it's like, it's one of these things, it's a paradoxical thing. You know, kind of like martial arts, it takes great hard work, day-to-day, you know, exercises and work and kind of, you know, focus and so on to make something spontaneous and easy. It's a very strange thing, you know, to become relaxed enough and focused enough and have, you know, the natural spontaneity of goodness flowing through you. Seems like it should be the most normal thing in the world. You think, well, look at a baby, look at a puppy, and you see this like sort of spontaneous goodness in these things. And then as, you know, as time goes on, you know, the world gets at us. And, you know, we've got to work to break out of that inertia, that downward pull, right? And that's another way of looking at that energy. We have to raise that energy within ourselves, that serpent energy, that, you know, that wisdom, up the spine, as it were, you know, and not just up the spine, but, you know, in our daily life too, right?
Well, that's the ultimate destination. Yes, it comes up, and as it comes up, it goes through the heart and then up to the mind and out to our arms and hands and our mouth, what we say, our works and words in the world. And it's a way of still being in the world, but not being bound by it. And this breaking through, you know, is like the bud blossoming through from the dead twig of the winter. It's proof, it's evidence. And then what happens with that? Well, then there's color, and then there's a blossom, and then bees come, and then there's leaves, and then there's fruit that you can eat. I mean, it's the beginning of this whole, you know, much larger process. But to get there, you're right, to go from the cold winter, and we become hardened. We develop a shell over time through adulthood. You have to, or you won't survive. But it, like the armor of the knight in medieval times, it can protect you in battle, but it also shields your spiritual heart from experiencing true love. And that's where the armor has to come off when he comes back to the maiden and let this in, which may be one of the most vulnerable things you can do. But the beauty has to come through. The flower has to grow up through the crack in the sidewalk. Nature has great forces that come to our aid. Yes, it takes a lot of work, and yes, a lot of those miles seemingly are traveled alone, but we are part of this larger force that wants us to do this work and is there to help, but we have to move our hands and feet, at least symbolically. We have to do what is ours to do, and that is to direct our minds in that way. Can I look at social media or the news and think the best in humanity and what people have to offer? Well, when I'm seeing and hearing a lot of some of the worst people have to offer, you know, then my mind is going in that direction. So take the wand and be clear on where you want to point it, but point it to that, point it upward. If it's a higher thing, point it, you know, to the heart of what's good and beautiful in the world. And while you're mired in all the hate and discord and frustration and pain and suffering and sorrow in all the world, you have that direction, you have that. And if you can blossom and show and shine your light and colors and flowers, that helps everybody. But it is the work of the magician, it's the work of the philosopher, it's the work of the mystic, the shaman, and really, it's the work of every seeker who listens to something like this.
Absolutely. Great way to put that. I also like, you know, just real quickly, and then we'll kind of wrap this up. I like where he talks about going back to the staff or the rod of Aaron that you were talking about, where it buds and it blossoms. And he says the blossoms on the rod of Aaron correspond to the roses on the rose cross, or the lotus blossoms of the East, and by that he means chakras. And then he said, when these flowers blossom forth, we know that our sins have been forgiven. We know that our sins have been forgiven. And then the other interesting thing he talks about is how at this point, you know, when you begin to open these centers within yourself, and you begin to sort of shine with this new wisdom that comes from the work that you're doing and the positive deeds and positive actions and thoughts and so on, that you get the attention of, let's call them spirit guides, masters of wisdom, angels, whatever you want to say. And these beings, these higher beings, then begin to help direct you. More makes more, as it were. So the more, you know, your spiritual light unfolds, the more help you get on your path to higher levels of understanding, is what he's pointing out. And I think that's a very valid point. And then he also points out that, you know, the more negativity, the more destructive qualities you cultivate in your life, you know, the more of that you tend to bring into your life, and you become a sort of target for some of those destructive elements, and you get pulled into their whirlwind. And again, it's very much like the idea of the force. It, you know, use the force, Luke, with Ben Kenobi, and then you see how Darth Vader is trying to have Luke tap into his hate and his anger. And that works, but it's destructive. It's a destructive use of that same force. And it leads to death and destruction and what Manly Hall is talking about, in the lower realms, you know, development of the lower realms. So those are interesting things. Do you want to read this last portion of it before we wrap it up? Because we always like to let Manly Hall speak in his own words. This is very...
Oh, sure. Yeah. That last page, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, when we realize that we are the staff and that our own development is the rod on which we must lean, then we better understand the miracles performed by those who have raised the brazen serpent in the wilderness. When we realize that it is the serpent power which brings to the brain the vital energy with which we think, we also realize what Christ meant when he said, "Be ye wise as serpents." And we also understand why Christ was symbolized in the ancient mysteries as a serpent coiled around a staff, head upward, emphasis. So let us go through life with a firm resolve to so live that the rod within ourselves, cut from the tree of life and depending upon us for its development, will flower out with the spiritual blossoms that tell of mastership. The end.
Amen. Amen. Beautifully put. It's incredible that he was such a young man when he wrote this book.
21, okay. Wisdom. I remember what I was doing when I was 21.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything, but apparently I had a good time. That's what people tell me. So.
Yeah, exactly. It's certainly, I wasn't doing this.
You
know? I wasn't doing, neither was I. I certainly wasn't writing beautiful spiritual pamphlets at the time. So
really amazing.
Anyway, we all have our own paths, don't we? So those are some of the ideas. I hope that those are helpful and kind of inspiring insights that'll lead you to meditate on these ideas in both sort of both forms of that that word, you know, physical meditation, actually sit and meditate, but also just to sort of meditate upon, think about, you know, stew over these different ideas. And do, if you can, pick up Symbolic Essays, first published works of Manly P. Hall, a great little guide, very wise and creatively presented material, and there's some great illustrations in there, and of course the rest of the book has an account of Parsifal, and then the breastplate of the high priest. Those are the other sections. So. We may go back and do those because they're both great sections as well. But thank you for joining us on this journey today. Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
I think that's it. I mean, we covered, it's 20 pages, 25 pages in a very small pamphlet, just packed with such great wisdom and things to ponder. But yeah, the work is our own. To do, and we are working with mighty forces, but we have to show, you know, what does it say, that heaven helps those who help themselves, and to demonstrate that in your life will ultimately and probably immediately bring even more aid and assistance on that direction. So
absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great point. All right. Well, thank you all for joining us today. We appreciate you guys being here. And if you can, please support us at anchor.fm/cosmiceye. You can make a monthly donation on there. Chris's book is The Spirit in the Sky, and that's available on Amazon. My book is If You Can Worry, You Can Meditate. That is available on Amazon as well. Of course, we are at cosmiceye.org. And you can find out more information on there. That we're actually doing some great work on the site and updating that. And there's some couple of neat new products on there. We've got some tarot bags and we've got some tarot decks that I was co-creator on. So there's a great cat tarot deck and unicorn tarot decks with they're fun decks with some cute symbolism, but they do retain the esoteric symbols. So they're for serious work, but they're kind of a lighter look at some of it. So check that out if you get a chance. Those are both available now, those two decks. And then there's some great tarot bags on there as well. Thank you again for joining us. We appreciate you guys being here. Thank you so much for all of you guys who are donating to us. We greatly appreciate you guys and everyone who's showing up. So have a great week. Be safe out there. Goodbye and God bless.